Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day. They call them the Killer Bees. Bogarts, Betts, Bradley, and last night's Red Sox star, Andrew Benintendi.
Fly ball down the left field line.
Uh-oh.
Shields into the corner, back there.
Gone.
And that ball gets out of here.
Oh.
He hit it out. It is gone. His second home run in the game.
This is crazy.
Red Sox lead it 10-0. Benintendi.
What a night.
With a superstar performance.
5 for 5, 6 RBIs, 2 bridge balls. I mean, this kid, what a night.
Dave O'Brien with the play-by-play call on Nesson and the Red Sox television network. Andrew Benintendi, 5 for 5 last night with 2 home runs. Very pleased to be joined by a good friend of the show, and we think one of the best in the business, and that is Dieter Kurtenbach. Dieter, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate coming back on.
All right, let's start with Gordon Hayward. He played, 2 years, I think, with Brad Stevens at Butler. He goes to Boston. I know he was conflicted. What swung him?
Ultimately, I think it was the fact that the money wasn't going to be all that different in Utah or Boston, just based on the fact that he didn't make all NBA this year and then wasn't eligible for the designated veteran player extension from the Jazz. And I think it was Stevens. I think that Stevens, he was a kid who didn't have a growth spurt until later in life. Hayward was, and Stevens was the first guy to offer him a scholarship. And even after, his family is big Purdue fans. They love Purdue. And even when Purdue came in late, he stuck with Brad Stevens at Butler. And then we remember what happened. I mean, what a Cinderella story. They were so close. Ultimately, I think that relationship swung him. And if the money wasn't going to be different, the coaching, you know, and I think he had a great affinity for Quinn Snyder, the Jazz coach, but he would have always wondered what if. And I think that's ultimately what swung him and probably why it took a little bit longer than everyone thought it might.
From an analytical point of view, does a player think about, you know, if I go to the Eastern Conference, my path to get to the ultimate goal and maybe even more fame out of it is easier? I mean, does a player think that way?
It'd be silly for a free agent not to think that way. I mean, if the goal is to win a championship and the goal is to be the star of a team that wins a championship, and you look at Golden State and you just saw your team losing, you know, 5 games to Golden State or get swept by Golden State, I mean, yeah, you're going to take that into consideration. Ultimately, the Celtics had the number one seed last year. We see what the Cavs are doing, and, you know, I don't think bringing back Richard Jefferson and Kyle Korver and signing Jose Calderon is going to get him over the hump. So, yeah, there's some weakness there. Now, I think Boston could have bolstered itself a little bit harder if it had actually played ball in Jimmy Butler and in Paul George trade negotiations. Danny Ainge is going to sit on those assets apparently until the day he's fired. But, yeah, Gordon Hayward makes that a 5-win better team. And 5 extra wins against a Cavs team that isn't going to do as well next year, in my opinion. Yeah, that might make a 5 or 6-game series maybe get to 7. I don't know if it gets them over the hump, but certainly gets them closer, and that's got to be a factor.
Yet most of the free agents so far, I think, have signed with the West. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, the there was only one of the so-called top 15 players in the NBA. Only one of them in LeBron James is still in the Eastern Conference until Gordon Hayward moved back over there. It's Yeah, with the Jimmy Butler trade and then Paul George getting traded to the Thunder, which, by the way, doesn't technically happen until tomorrow. So it's not as if it's not as if the Celtics couldn't have gotten in after they signed Gordon Hayward. All of this is still theoretical because of the moratorium. But, yeah, I mean, the West is just absolutely loaded, and then you still know that the team at the top isn't going anywhere for a bit. So, yeah, I would absolutely – if I'm a free agent, I'm looking to only talk to Eastern Conference teams, because if I'm like Dion Waiters, I might make the Eastern Conference All-Stars next year.
And there's a statement unto itself. Were you surprised that Kevin Durant decided to take less than he could have and for the reasons he did?
No. Because he'll get $201 million next year, $203 million next year. He's in it. He's in it for the long run. When he made that decision, it wasn't a let's wait and see. He did the 1-1 because the Warriors asked him to do that last year. It gave them flexibility. And ultimately, I mean, the allure of going to Golden State, we have to remember this, you know, only one year he wins the championship. He knows why they won the championship. And it was him. And it was because Andre Iguodala played out of his mind in the finals defensively. And it was because Sean Livingston is a great bench player. And they won because of depth. And the Cavs didn't have it. And that's what put them over the top. And Kevin Durant's not going to sacrifice that so that he can get an extra $2 million in one year. I'm sure Nike will make up the difference for him if he asks him real nice. So he'll get his money in the long run. He'll get his money in the long run. He's on that team because that team is going to make him happier, and it's ultimately going to make him more money off the court. And, you know, it's funny. Everyone's, well, you know, Steph Curry's going to get paid $40 million a year now. Steph Curry was getting paid around $40 million by Under Armour. Kevin Durant is getting paid around $35 million a year by Nike. Bob Myers, the GM of the Warriors, once said, every player in the NBA is an employee of a shoe company, and we rent him out for a while. And ultimately, that the agents know that, and winners sell more shoes. And, Kevin Durant made more than the difference up by winning a championship this year. So I don't think he thought too hard about taking a hard line with the Warriors.
Yeah, I completely understand that. Now, here's the next part. Of those who have decided to rent their players from their shoe employees, we all know that the NBA usually operates with success when you have big stars and multiples of threes. I mean, it goes all the way back to the 60s with Cousy, Havlicek, and Russell, all the way up to the current time.
Absolutely.
Houston ends up getting Chris Paul, so now they've got two. Paul George goes to Oklahoma City, now they've got two. What do those two franchises have to do to somehow? Because those two moves only like make a dent in the gap. They don't even remotely come close to closing it. So what does each one need to do to close it more?
I don't think Oklahoma City's in a position to do much of anything. It's a small market team up against a luxury tax, and you know, two is better than the one they had last year. So I think they're viewing it as an upgrade, and I think they also expect Steven Adams, the center, to continue to improve. And that's a really, really good 1-2-3, specifically defensively if Russell Westbrook locks in. Because Paul George, when he's on ball, it can be one of the better defenders in the NBA, and I really like Steven Adams in the middle. So I think Oklahoma City's comfortable with that placement. Houston needs to somehow convince whoever takes over the New York Knicks to give Carmelo Anthony $54 million to go away and to convince Carmelo Anthony to sign for the minimum. You know, you can talk about Eric Gordon, and you can talk about, you know, some of the bench players they have there, but they're going all in on scoring 135, 140 points a game, ABA style. And you might as well, you know, if you're going to double down, you might as well triple down. And Carmelo Anthony certainly would do that, but there's just no feasible way, unless the Knicks want to take on Ryan Anderson's contract, which is unlikely. Unless that happens, I don't see the Rockets being able to add a third. And they'll talk like they will, and everyone will believe that they could, just because no one saw the Chris Paul thing happening. But ultimately, they're pretty capped out and tapped out, unless another team facilitates for them.
That's interesting. Also, when you look at the makeup of how the West is, a team that made as many moves as anybody was Sacramento.
I kind of like
when's the last time you wrote a story about Sacramento?
Oh, I mean, well, when they traded DeMarcus Cousins, I slandered him.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Like, Sacramento Kings, you get this certain perception of, oh, well, they made a lot of moves, and of course it won't work out. I actually really like the moves that they make. They have young upside talent on that team now. That Boogie Cousins trade doesn't look as bad today as it did a while back after we saw what Paul George and Jimmy Butler went for. And they started playing pretty well after Boogie left. And I love the Zach Randolph deal. I mean, Dave Yeager knows exactly what he's getting with him. He brings in a veteran leadership. He's one of the best guys in the NBA. He's going to bring an edge to that team that they haven't had in a while. I really like the veteran presence who still can get it done, and, you know, willing to take that little extra cash before they get out of the league. And I think Fox has superstar potential, and Buddy Hield is going to be great off of him, and Scal Labissiere played really well at the end of last year. I mean, I don't think they're going to make the playoffs or anything, but they're not going to be a laughingstock, that's for sure.
Exactly. All right, you mentioned in a previous answer dealing with the Celtics about Jimmy Butler. He ends up going to Minnesota. Well, now they've got Wiggins. They got Karl Anthony Towns. Now they have him, plus a couple of other guys that played for Tibbs when they were at the Chicago. Non-playoff team last year. What did this do for the T-Wolves profile?
Well, they still need Towns and Wiggins to learn how to defend. And until that happens, they're going to be right on that threshold. They're definitely not in the realm of contender yet. But, I mean, this 30-win team or something last year, they could be in the 50s this year if it all goes right. And that's a pretty massive jump. That's not commonly heard of. Butler, it'll be fascinating to see how Jeff Teague, the new point guard, handles two guys who want to pound the ball into the court and cut to the basket. Pretty much the same profile of offensive skill set in Jimmy Butler and Andrew Wiggins. They also, with Taj Gibson, who is an excellent player, any team would be lucky to have him as a bench guy. If he's their starting four, they have no spacing on that court. And while Jeff Teague is an excellent player, he's not going to be able to provide it single-handedly. They need to get shooting, and they need to get it cheap. And that's the hardest thing to find on the market for nothing. And I'm fascinated to see how it all meshes together, because right now the only two guys who can shoot from distance on that team are Karl Anthony Towns and Jeff Teague. I mean, and that goes right down the list, all the way to the end of the roster. We'll see. They have some assets that they can move, and maybe they can get in, but they're capped out. This was sort of the one off season that they had before those Wiggins and Towns extensions have to come into play. This was about all the money they're going to get to play with for a pretty good period of time here. And I don't know if they totally capitalized on the opportunity. And I think that might be just a byproduct of Tibbs not being a big fan of the three-point shot still. And that's a viewpoint that can make you lose a job pretty quick these days.
I agree with you on that. You've got to understand the value of the shot, and you've got to embrace it. You have to. Markel Fultz, Ben Simmons, and Joel Embiid have combined for 39 NBA games in their careers.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're on a roll here. They added in J.J. Redick. What do you think of Philadelphia today, and what is your anticipation, at least initially, for Philadelphia?
I think Philly nailed it with the Redick deal. I thought that was a brilliant deal.
Agreed.
There's no such thing as a bad one-year deal, but that's the kind of person
you need. And not only that, but this changes their court spacing with somebody's legit outside.
Unbelievable. I mean, and it gives everybody a little bit of room to breathe in the sense of you have a veteran there. He knows what it takes. And he's not some hothead who's like, I came here to win. He knows what he's getting into. He took his payday, and I'm glad he did, because he was making 27 over 4 years with the Clippers. He's going to make just as much when taxes are factored in 1 year with the Sixers. And he's going to be the Sherpa that helps that team sort of get to where it needs to go. It all hinges on Embiid being healthy. When Embiid was healthy, he was a borderline MVP caliber player last year. He was that big of a game changer. We don't know what we're getting with Simmons, but now the pressure, it's not as much of a need for Simmons to be that superstar. I feel comfortable that Fultz can come in and provide league average point guard play with some flashes every now and again. He's got to really be ready to go defensively from day one, and it's so great that J.J. Redick will be playing next to him, because J.J. Redick is one of those guys that you didn't notice because he wasn't the most physically gifted, but he was a great defender. I mean, that guy's max effort every single time down the court. That's the kind of example that you want to set in Philadelphia. It'll be interesting to see what they do with Jahlil Okafor now, because they signed Amir Johnson, and frankly, why have two of the same thing? If they can go out and get something or somebody to give a little bit more diversity to the portfolio while moving on from Jahlil Okafor, I think that the Sixers could go from, you know, they could get in, they could definitely get into the playoffs next year in the Eastern Conference. I don't think you need to even be 500 to do that, but they can, if everything goes right, they could definitely sniff first round host in the playoffs. But ultimately, I'm thinking 6 or 7 seed right now, but with all the upside in the world coming after that.
Yeah, no question. One final question, Dieter. I'll let you go. Appreciate the time very, very much. And that deals with what is the soap opera known as the New York Knicks. might as well say the fun one for last. We'll deal with the soap opera. It starts with Carmelo. How do you see it playing out? And then I'll flip it to the other side. How should it play out?
It's a great question. How do I see it playing out is I don't see anything happening anytime soon, because $54 million is a lot of money for even the endless pocketbooks of the New York Knicks to get rid of a player who can still put some butts in seats. It's a toxic environment. That situation isn't going to make it any more toxic, so you might as well make some money off of it, and you're going to pay it one way or another. I kind of feel bad for James Dolan, the owner, not because he deserves any credit for anything, but because he hands over, you know, he did what everyone asked him to do for so long, which is hand over the keys to the franchise, stop meddling in basketball decision making, and let somebody who's smarter than you and more, you know, qualified than you handle it. And he's done that now twice, and both of them have blown up in his face.
Right.
And I think it's smart of him to not go in and now, well, that was the wrong decision, I'm going to start meddling again, because we know that was the wrong decision. But it's sad, actually, because he kind of can't win for trying. And we'll see who he hires. I thought that letting David Griffin get away from the Knicks and not just handing him a $5 million a year salary and whatever title he wanted was a mistake, because he did such a great job with the Cavs and was out there. And there's a lot of good GMs just sitting out there looking for a good job. I mean, we'll see what happens. Ultimately, I don't think that I don't know what they're going to do anytime soon in terms of shaking up that front office. They might just stick with the personnel in play and say, well, now Phil's gone and that's addition by subtraction. But, you know, that team's not going to be good. We know that. I don't really see it. It needs to show something, though, on the court next year to convince somebody, anybody, to just take their money going forward as a free agent. And I don't think that it's possible for that team to show upside if Carmelo Anthony's still there. So while I think he starts the season with the Knicks, I think maybe some way halfway or right up to that deadline, I think they probably – they can't trade him. No one's going to take that money. But maybe they consider the buyout then, or they're a lot closer to considering the buyout then. And then that opens up a whole fun Pandora's box of possibilities that we'll touch when that finally comes down.
And we'll do that with you when that moment arrives. Dieter, absolute pleasure. It's always great talking with you. Always great information.
Love coming on with you guys. Anytime.
Dieter Kurtenbach. Dennis Dodd comes up in the next half hour. We'll talk about college football as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Merce family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle with a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Now we're vibrant. Wow. You know, last year when you and I chipped in for that thesaurus for Lawrence.
That's right.
We didn't think it would pay off like this.
I don't know if that had something to do with me filling in with him this morning or not. Maybe that had something to do with since I'll be filling in again for him tomorrow morning in the producer chair.
Wow.
We're pulling off the double bubble this week.
You'll have to get back to me as which show enjoy more. Yeah.
I think you know the answer to that.
Well, as much as it hurts my feelings, okay.
Oh.
All right.
although when I woke up this morning, I did not realize I'd be talking about the hot dog eating contest on the mark this morning as much as I did.
So. Well, have you noticed we haven't talked about it once?
That's right.
Oh. 20,000 calories in 10 minutes. Think about that.
Another record. 72.
Yeah, but 20,000 calories in 10 minutes.
50 grams of protein. If there's a plus.
But now, I only watched the Open with Paul Page, whomever. And I just wanted, the only reason I watched the Open is I wanted to see if Melanie Collins was doing it again. For the second or third straight year, because Mel's from State College.
Mm-hmm.
And she worked with us at Channel 3, and the two of us co-hosted a show together for 2 years. Just really genuinely like her, and I think she should be a rising star in the business anyway. And I just wanted, because he did it the last couple of years, I just wanted to see, like, oh, and then all of a sudden, boom, they cut to her, and she was talking with Joey Chestnut. I said, okay, good. And I moved on.
This was the first year I missed it live in ages. I was en route from my place down to Pine Otter Days in Northumberland and missed it live yesterday. That was always part of the 4th of July. I'd always watch that.
To my credit, I've got a perfect record on that. I've never watched it except for the beginning. I see the highlights of it, and I sit back, whoa. I get sick watching it.
Yeah, quite a few do.
I mean, I'm talking about the highlights. And I use the word highlight loosely. Sports bozo of the day. Cowboys linebacker Damian Wilson. Arrested Tuesday night. Charged with 2 counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. After he allegedly backed his car into a woman and then brandished a rifle. According to Frisco, Texas police. According to the police report, the 24-year-old Wilson was arrested after he intentionally backed his truck into a female while parking at the Toyota Stadium during Frisco's Freedom Fest. He then brandished a rifle at another male, causing him to be in fear. That's what the report says. He was released from the Frisco Detention Center on $10,000 bond for each count. A Cowboys spokesman said the team is aware of the situation, considering it's on every television, radio station, and newspaper in the area, and that they were gathering more information. We're aware of the situation. I just picked up the paper. Wow. If you play defense for that team, holy mackerel. Every time you turn around, they've had some problem with somebody. And that defense. All right. Let's talk some college football. It's that time. That means time to bring in Dennis Dodge, CBS Sports. Hey, Dennis, welcome. It's always great to hear you.
Steve, how are you?
I'm doing well. Great to hear you. The SEC, you got to give them credit. I mean, next week's the All-Star game. Nothing's going on until they have SEC Media Day. How good are they at public relations as to what they do there?
They have been great. The media days themselves have become so big and so compartmentalized that some of that access, except for the network, is not as open as it used to be. But I don't think that's the way it is in any sport, baseball, football, anything. But it cracks the seal on the season, the unofficial beginning of college football.
No question. I want to get to a couple of issues. Let's start with, obviously, the transfer rule. The Sutton kid from Kansas State, Bill Snyder putting out 35 schools, including some in Division II that, quote, you can't transfer to. How do you view all of this, and what changes need to be made?
Well, it's being addressed. There's a transfer working group, if you will, made up of NCAA administrators. Now, I know no one wants to hear about another committee at the NCAA, but they are working diligently on this issue. The first fix is going to be pretty easy. If it makes it to the convention in 18 in January, that Bill Snyder thing can't happen. In other words, a coach won't be able to block a kid from transferring by not releasing a scholarship. That's, ridiculous on its face. Because of a lot of reasons. So I think that will get fixed. The hard part is the grad transfer thing. So there's a lot of people that want that time spent in grad school to be a legitimate progress towards a degree.
Right.
A master's degree. I'm not sure if I agree with that. And the year in residence. That's going to be a very thorny issue. As where it stands right now, we all know that if you're an existing athlete and you want to transfer, unless you get a waiver, you have to sit out that year in residence.
Right, exactly. Also, Oklahoma made the big move. Bob Stoops leaves. Lincoln Riley comes in. They went through a spring practice under this current system. Was the timing right to do what they did at Oklahoma, in your opinion, for success?
The more I think about it, the more I say yes. I mean, look, no one planned this. It was a complete shock to everybody. So this wasn't – I don't think there was anything they sat down around the table in January and talked about this. He just felt like it was time. And if you think about it, we're talking about early June. I think it was June 7th that he stepped down, Bob Stoops. What else is going on? The hay's in the barn. You're doing off-season conditioning. The season is 3 months away. And, everybody's just kind of chillaxing. So you get the new coach in there, get him ready to put his staff together and his seal on things, and you're good to go. Now, obviously, the other part of that is you're elevating the youngest coach in FBS. And that has been, they say never be the guy to follow the guy. It wasn't a good idea for Ron Zook. But Lincoln Riley is seen as that guy, that next generation. And Oklahoma does have a track record in these sorts of things. Bud Wilkinson was 31 when he took over in 1949. And Barry Switzer was 34 when he took over. Lincoln Riley's 33.
Right. You put out your annual rankings of FBS coaches, including the hot seat rankings. Who makes the hot seat for you?
Well, at the very top are Brian Kelly and Kevin Sumlin, who basically have to win this year or they're gone, at least in my opinion. We know it's a statement of fact at Texas A&M because Kevin Sumlin's AD came out at the SEC spring meetings and told that on national television.
Right.
He told Paul Feinbaum that Kevin Sumlin has to win or else. And after three consecutive 8-5s there in Aggieland, they're kind of sick of that whole start fast, finish slow thing. And so he's on warning. Brian Kelly, 4-8, it's the second worst record, at least ties for it in Notre Dame history. Charlie Weiss went 3-9 in 2008 or 9, I can't remember. But he has to win. I don't know if 6-6 in a bowl game even gets him there.
Right, that's interesting. Who else ought to be in that? I think you've got four coaches. Start improving now. Who needs to get it going and start hitting the gas?
Yeah, I think Cliff Kingsbury, a guy who as a supermodel is great, but as a head coach.
That's why I like
that. But as a head coach, we're not sure of yet. He's 24-26. Last year, he literally had the nation's best offense, yards per game, and literally the nation's worst defense, right, yards per game. So I don't know where you come out on that. It's not really a recipe for success in my book. He has to start winning bigger than he has after 4 years.
Yeah, that's why every once in a while I've run into Dennis. He always makes me. He'll throw out a one liner. I love that's the Kingsbury thing was great. I want to ask you about Penn State and the way they've been able to come back through all of this. What along the line? What are a couple things that you've seen here at Penn State that has allowed them to come out of this and be in the spot they're in now?
I'm in the process of answering that question because it occurred to me just recently that we're 18 days away from the fifth anniversary of the sanctions that were supposed to burn the program to the ground.
Right.
In that time, in less than that time, in 4.5 years, Penn State changed coaches twice and won the Big Ten. It says a lot about Penn State. It says a lot about the NCAA. And obviously they rescinded some of the penalties. We know that. But I don't think they'll come anywhere close to doing this to anybody ever again, much like the death penalty with SMU. And it speaks to the point that I think about five programs in the country that could survive something like this, and Penn State is one of them.
What are your thoughts on what James Franklin has done to help make that happen in his phase of this operation?
I think he's been great. Obviously, he's recruited. They have one of the best offenses in the country. To get to the Rose Bowl and play that kind of game shows that Penn State is back. Look, I think it speaks volumes about his career. Now he's done it at Vanderbilt. And we all know the constraints there, won 9 games twice. He's taken over a wounded program is the best way to put it. And look, we should preface everything we say about sympathy for the victims, because that's the story here, not football.
Oh, always.
But he took over a program that was wounded and made it into a champion. And I think that, look, if he left today, he might be able to write his own ticket. You know, he was kind of known as that. Well, who is this guy? He's got a great personality. He did it at Vanderbilt. But what is he really? I think he's showing the world who he is now, a really good coach.
Dennis, you made a great point about 62 or 63 coaches that are entering their third year or less in college football. What does that tell us right now about the state of this? And also, what is it telling us about how much time a coach has to make something happen?
Well, overall, a lack of patience from ADs for their guys. It also suggests this is one of the coldest hot seats in years. Because of that, almost half of FBS coaches are going into their third year or less. And you would think, I call it the year of the honeymoon, you would think that they're going to be given some time,
right,
to prove themselves. So about four or five in Florida alone that are on that list. Mark Richt, Charlie Strong, Lane Kiffin, Butch Davis, who are among those guys. So they're not. You wouldn't think those aren't going to change anytime soon. So it's a combination of that impatience and I think some staying power now. Some of these coaches, we're not going to see wholesale changes for a while.
What do you think, you may, one of those will be, I'll make this the last question because I know you have to get going, about Tom Herman with Texas. What is the state, in your opinion, of Texas football, and why have they stalled?
I didn't get the first part of the question.
Okay, Tom Herman takes over Texas, so he's one of those first-year coaches. So what is your opinion of Texas football, and why do you think that something like that, that shouldn't stall, has?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. You know, Charlie Strong, for whatever reason, and there are a lot of them you could posit out there, didn't get it done at Texas. But 16-21 after 3 years at Texas and losing to Kansas isn't going to get it done. I think at least under him, it was lack of attention to detail. They really had some holes on their special teams, had a lot of missed extra points, which in the moment doesn't sound like much, but in the big picture does. Great recruiter. He had 2 consecutive top 10 recruiting classes to the point that he told Tom Herman, through me, the cake is baked. All it needs is some icing, referring to the team he took over.
Right.
In terms of Tom Herman, I think he's this is hard to say, but a proven commodity. He's got a championship ring from Ohio State.
Yep.
He's one of those quarterback whispers. You know, we know what he did that year at in 14 at Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
Two big seasons, including a New Year's Six win in 15 at Houston. And there are no excuses for Tom Herman now, if there ever was any. He's got all the resources he wants. And I do really believe that he's going to lead Texas back to the top in championships. This starts another discussion, but there's probably no other place in the country better suited for Texas to win championships than the Big 12. So I don't think you'll see them moving anytime soon.
Dennis, I know you have to get to something else. I appreciate the time very much. Always enjoy the conversation.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Dennis Dodd, CBS Sports. We'll come back, wrap it up in a moment. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Great to have you with us. Richard Sandomir, New York Times, joins us tomorrow to discuss his book, Pride of the Yankees. Essentially, he takes a deep and in-depth look into the making of and the accuracy of the movie about Lou Gehrig's life. He uncovered along the way several interesting things. A lot of it, some of it backs it up all the way. Some of it isn't quite factually correct. But all the way to, you know, the charade played by the studio about who would play Gehrig. Well, Gary Cooper was under contract to Sam Goldwyn. Right? But Gary Cooper also, once he got the part, they had to teach him how to do everything left-handed. Gary Cooper was right-handed. And there had been a rumor for a long time that they took all the scenes that Cooper was in where he actually had to participate in baseball and that they reversed the film. And that's not true. We'll get into it with him on that coming up tomorrow. I'm looking forward to that very much. And what, three of our highest podcasts happen to be Friday shows?
Hey, within the past month, all featuring, guess who? The soothsayer. The mystic from the east.
Yes, it's the soothsayer, not the soothsayer.
Right, did I say suit? Sorry.
No, you did not. No, no. Okay. They're so close.
It's been a long day.
It's so close. Well, if I had to break up arguments, I'd be... I'd just spend my morning doing that.
Extra two cups of coffee. We're good.
Yeah. Nobody can tell. Whew. There we go. So that's what's coming up on the show. In the past, what'd you say, the past month? All right, I'm going to text him. And he's got to know that, and he's going to want us to double his money.
Yeah, that's true.
So let's see. Let's think. How much does he get? Multiply
something
that
times zero, wasn't it?
Multiply that number times two. I think budget-wise, we're still in good shape.
Sweet.
Perfect.
This is all those extra people up there in Connecticut and the Northeast that he's been...
believe me.
We're seeing the numbers. It's paying off.
I mean, he has spread the word across everywhere from Litchfield all the way up to Gloucester.
He's got that part of the nation covered. We got our great friend, our new podcast fan, Jim, out in San Francisco, checking in with us from time to time. We love it.
Jim, that's cool. I'm really glad Jim does that. That is so cool. That's great. So I'm glad to have Jim on board. I wonder if Jim counts in terms of... Yeah, well, we'll say Jim counts, right?
Sure does.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So... All right, but Richard Sandomir on the show tomorrow. We'll also have another author on the show for Friday. Yeah, tomorrow Friday, about Kentucky basketball. And now they're one of the only high school tournaments left there. Everybody just, I mean, everybody plays. There's no classification. He wrote a book about it. And we'll get to that as well. So we have a lot going on. You got to remind me, I've got to get a hold of John Bacon. John Bacon wrote a book that comes out next month. I think it comes out on August the 10th, I want to say, about John Saunders.
It's hard to believe. It's almost been a year since he passed.
Yeah. Well, John was in the process of doing the book when he passed away. I mean, this book was already in the works. Oh, the heck with that. I was just texting myself. Makes it easier when that happens, right? But I think he'd be a fascinating... John's always great. John and I have been friends for years.
He's been awesome every time he's been on.
Yeah. All right. So Richard St. Amir on the show tomorrow. And then Captain Ratings joins us on Friday. Wait till he finds out. He's going to be hard to live with. And I know firsthand.
We're your home for news, sports, weather, and your home for the Phillies. News Radio 1070 WKOK, Sunbury.